the Show, which is coming up next. Stay with us after that for Surfabilly Freakout at 6, Freeform Music at 7, Roots, Rock, and Reggae at 8, and Get In Your Jammies at 10. I'm cutting broadband off a little bit early today because I'm really excited about the show and I've only got half an hour. There's a lot going on. We are fully in fall theater swing in Champaign-Urbana and See You at the Show wants to be at the center of it. This is Eric Schacht. I'm here with my co-host, Linda Evans. How you doing, Linda?
Good. How are you?
Are you out of breath from jogging here?
I am a little bit. My daughter's voice lesson went long, so I have a good excuse.
Uh-oh. Wonder what she's getting ready for. I am here in the studio with Ed Pierce, the director of It's a Wonderful Life Live at the Station Theater, and also with Kendall Johnson, who is directing the musical The Falsettos, which has auditions tomorrow. So we have a lot to talk about. And Kendall's also stage managing It's a Wonderful Life. So welcome to See You at the Show.
Hey, hey, here we are.
Thank you.
Okay, you're sharing a mic, so get in tight.
All right.
So we won't do any of the business at the front side of the show. We'll get right down to you because we are lucky to have on opening night of the show the most important man in town right now, the director of It's a Wonderful Life Live. So Linda and I got to see the show last night, and, you know, I use a lot of metaphors in describing shows, like nailed it, killed it, but in the spirit of Santa Claus, you slayed it. And registered trademark.
Yeah, nobody's used that before, I'm sure.
Well, there was like when we were when they were doing all the Christmas carols and stuff at the beginning, there was somebody had talked in between and referenced slay a lot. And then I just said, slay, that's a word I use to describe shows. So, boom, it all came together, serendipity.
And it fits.
That's what I'm aiming for all the time.
Yeah.
Is serendipity.
Great. So, this very uniquely is a live radio format of It's a Wonderful Life.
Yes.
That's something that I'm not that familiar with. So what drew you to this show?
Well, you know, I had actually performed in some live radio productions a few years ago. And, you know, it's just, it's so much fun as an actor. And it's also so much fun as an audience member to see shows in that format. And so, you know, I thought It's a Wonderful Life would make a great fit.
Well, I think it did, and it's interesting that there are other radio shows and radio format shows happening in town over the next week or two. Linda and I'll talk a little bit about those at the end because you have our focus. So the thing that was most interesting to me was how much even though your actors were not portraying characters other than themselves, there was so much acting. And did you find that you also had a lot of directing as much as you would in a normal production?
I would say yes, you know, because even though there's not as much, you know, blocking as there would be in a regular show, moving around the set, changing scenes, you know, and scenery, any of that kind of stuff that there would be in a straight show, it was a challenge for the actors in that you have to do all of your acting through your voice. You know, an audience member needs to be able to sit there with their eyes closed and tell what's going on. And so all of the actors, I think, had this challenge of acting in a way that they, you know, a lot of them had never done that kind of acting before. And then on top of that, you know, there are so many characters in the show that we have 9 actors and then a sound effects person and our musical directors on stage. So there are so many roles that all of the actors had to play multiple roles. So that just, you know.
What's the count? How many roles are there?
Oh, gosh. You know, I've never sat down to count.
Yeah. I think, well, we had Katie Procise on the show last week. And for some reason, the number 30 is in my head.
Yeah, that sounds about
right. Yeah, I think that's what she said.
And she had 5 or 6. Mm-hmm. And I was, because she talked about how she was able to distinguish her voices with the kids that she had to do. And I was like, yeah, you know, that's got to be so subtle just to you. But it was.
It
she did it.
She nailed it. I mean, she really seems like a young kid and different ones too, which was really
impressive. Zuzu thing at the end, like he almost got Jake to break. I mean, it was so close one time because it is just.
Yeah.
It is, and she does do something different with her mouth and
and even her mannerisms. It's interesting because I close my eyes because during radio type shows, I try to close my eyes and imagine listening to it on the radio. But I didn't. I would do it, and I couldn't keep them closed last night because everybody was so interesting to watch as well.
Yes.
So even though it was really good as radio style, it's very, very interesting to actually watch and look at. And that's kind of impressive to do both.
Oh, well, thank you. You know, one of the things I told them, though, was in order to get into those multiple characters, one way to do it would be through physicality. So even though that wouldn't come through on the radio part, it would help them get into those characters. And
yeah.
Yeah. One real awesome example of that was towards the end when Chelsea Collier was George's mom. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I think she was on as George's mom earlier, but I noticed the scene at the end when she's kind of a little distraught. She was literally clutching her pearls. Yes. She had a pearl necklace on. Yes. And like like the old saying, like a pearl clutching, and she clutched her pearls. And then and it did feel like she nailed it. And Jake grew a mustache, which he didn't seem too fond of.
But, no, it's coming off right after the show.
Yeah. I think every male in the show had a beard, I think, when rehearsal started. Yeah. And so, you know, when I had to break the news that they had to shave their beards, they all asked, well, can I at least keep the mustache?
Yeah.
And most of them have.
Well, you're sitting across from an alopecian who doesn't like that sort of discrimination against people incapable of growing facial hair. But I'm also not afraid to put fake facial hair on. Hashtag Michael Steen. So Jake Fava and Joy Hofsommer, I guess they're the stars. I mean, they're introduced as the stars within the radio broadcast because they play George and Mary. And Jake was just, I mean, I just have to say that it's really not fair who he is because I was introduced to him with his gifted singing.
Yeah.
And to see, and I guess in Stupid Effing Bird, I saw him as also a great actor. But now he's done yet another thing in seemingly an unparalleled fashion, the way that he was able to, what he did with George Bailey, I thought was genius. And so I was just sitting there like, what, now the guy can dance too? I mean, how many things can this guy do? So Jake, go to Broadway, give us locals a chance, man.
and he's a really nice guy too. I mean, he's a sweetheart and he's very supportive of all the theater in town. So,
yeah.
I mean, he's just all of it. It's great. You've got a great cast.
He is that. And we were fortunate enough to be able to capitalize on his singing voice a little bit in the show as well. So.
Well, the singing before the show was a little intimidating. You have some great singers in your cast. And so
I'm like, yeah, right.
Right, because here I am, like, I'm really like taking voice lessons and working on my voice, but I was like really shy to join in with that.
It would probably help if there were more people in the audience.
That's true.
I mean, we were there for a dress, so there were only a few people in the audience, but it felt very nice.
I'd kind of like walked into the wrong house and didn't know anybody at the party, even though I knew most of those people. They were doing something that I was just going to stay out of.
And that's a lot for your actors to do half an hour of something so up and energized before they actually get into the show.
Are they going to be able to maintain that?
Well, here's the thing. I told them, you know, you don't have to memorize lines, so this is the trade-off. I'm going to make you do a half-hour concert before the show.
Yeah.
Nice. I like it.
Well, there's and so is that mostly unscripted or is that all scripted?
No, mostly unscripted. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. They are playing altered versions of themselves, 1940s versions. They're playing 1940s radio actors who have the same name as themselves. So I said, just, you know, get out there and be nice to the audience as they walk in. And let's have a party every night.
Well, and speaking of, I guess, kind of unscripted, Cheryl Forrest Morgenson is your pianist that you referenced. And, I mean, the piano is almost like kind of like a 10th cast member.
Absolutely.
Because in the radio style, it fills gaps and nobody's singing along with her. But it's mood music, and she did that all herself, she told me?
She did, yes.
That's amazing.
You know, as our musical director, she came in and wrote all of that music and wrote some lyrics for some of the music, and like you said, it is such a an important element to the show that I'm just thrilled that she joined in.
And the other, I guess the 11th character then would be the Foley Board, which mm-hmm. is run primarily by John Tilford. And
he, that's right.
The look that he has is so perfect. It almost is like Paul Schaefer on the Letterman Show or something. Just like a guy, you love it when the camera pans over to him because it's just like there's an energy and like he's manic kind of, and he's just having fun. Like so the Foley Board, I guess I was educated by Katie last week and a little bit mm-hmm. by Linda, because I wasn't familiar with it. And I guess I was expecting some sort of like literal board with various tools on it to make sounds, not Foley table with
table.
Mm-hmm. shoes. And I mean, list some of the crazy things that are on there.
You know, actually, our show doesn't get too crazy as far as Sound Effects goes. Have the shows you've been
I mean, with? I don't, yeah, we, I don't know if we get, we have a wind machine.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Can we borrow it for our show?
After our show's done. This Saturday at 7 o'clock and Sunday at 3. Yeah. After that, you're welcome to borrow it.
I have a farting machine.
Awesome. We'll keep that in mind. That
how did they do? Was he really breaking glass under the table?
It was a.
Yes, he was.
Yeah,
he's
really breaking glass.
Yeah.
Wow.
But it was in a break box or something, right?
Oh, yes. Everything's.
Oh, yeah. I'm not implying at all that it's unsafe. Don't sit in the front row, everybody. You never know what's going to come off of the Foley board.
But you know, that's, I think, part of the joy of seeing these staged radio productions, right, is that you're watching how these sound effects get made. And it's a lot of fun. And John Tilford, you know, I worked with him first, I don't know how many decades ago. We were both in Assassins, and, you know, it's always so much fun being able to work with John, so I was thrilled he was able to be in the show.
So John has been involved at the station since 1983. When did you start getting involved in the local theater community?
1983.
Wow.
I my freshman year here at the U of I, I auditioned for a show. I Never Sang for My Father, directed by Rick Orr, and he cast me as a 55-year-old man. And that's what I am now.
I think I was delivering flowers for Rick that year. So maybe he sent you a celebratory bouquet after a show or something.
I've been a company member for many, many years now. However, I've been out of town for most of that time. I just returned a few years ago. So this is kind of my return to the Station Theater. I directed one show there. Back in 94, I think it was. So now I'm back.
What did you direct in 94?
Oh, now I've just forgotten the name.
Oh, no, sorry. I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
Yeah, it's that show, Prelude to a Kiss.
There you go.
Yeah. It was a Valentine's Day show. I only direct shows that are based around holidays.
Yeah. Well, Linda and I were talking. Was it on the air last week or was it last night where we said that we each had a confession to make?
It was last night. I've been thinking about your confession. So now I think we have different confessions.
Oh, really?
I think your confession is you've never seen the show, the TV show.
I've never seen the movie. Mm-hmm. It's a Wonderful Life.
You've never seen it,
I've
right?
never seen it.
See, okay.
How did you know my confession but have a different confession?
Because my confession is I don't like the movie.
Ooh.
That's worse than not seeing it. I should be shot. But no.
I don't know if that's true. Like, I don't know which one of us would get more scorn.
I think mine.
Really?
Mine. People love it. But I have to say, as someone who is not a fan, I find it very sad and depressing. And it amazes me that it's a Christmas show. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed your show last night.
Oh,
so even
thank
someone
you.
Who doesn't like It's a Wonderful Life will like your show.
Yeah.
The show. The story, yes, is surprisingly dark, and I think some of the themes are pretty dark as well. But yes, it's it takes place around a holiday season, and it's become a Christmas classic.
It's a classic, I know, and And I really liked your version of it. I felt more connected to your characters than I do to the movie. Nothing against the wonderful actors in the movie. But I don't know. It's something about the lighting or something about... like
the set's beautiful.
Types of
and
that.
The, yeah. And the costuming is amazing.
There's something I think about this format or just doing it on stage in general. You know, when you're watching a movie, you're kind of looking through a window, right? You're looking into a realistic scene that you're kind of invited to fall into a little bit. Whereas when you see a show, and especially this show, which has an additional layer of artifice, you're forced to look at things anew, right? You're forced to look at the characters and the relationships with fresh eyes. And so maybe that was part of it.
Maybe. But, I think so. And I think it was, I really, really do not like the guardian angel in the original movie. Mm-hmm. For some reason, he pulls me out of it. Mm-hmm. Whereas I thought yours was really well done. And
David Laker did a good job. Yeah. I liked his, I warmed up to it the same way.
See, what I think is interesting about the guardian angel, Clarence, I think one of the things in the film, one of the things in the story, is that it's a story of George becoming an adult. He, in the course of seeing what life would be like without him, he's forced to leave childhood things behind, and realize that his adult responsibilities are fulfilling in a way that, you know, his childhood dreams aren't. And I find it interesting that Clarence, who's a very childish character, is the one that, you know, kind of makes that transition happen within George.
Right.
You know.
Well, before we let you go, Ed, because I know your cast is nervously wondering where their director is. And
their stage manager.
Their stage manager more than their director. It's opening night.
I needed an hour, because we needed a half hour with you and then a half hour with Kendall. So we're talking about It's a Wonderful Life, which opens at the station tonight at 7:30.
Yep.
Get
there early.
You know, having seen it now once, and I was so mesmerized by the acting that I really want to know how it plays as a radio show. So my suggestion was going to be in that little corner to the right when you walk in, that you put a couch facing away from the stage with like a fake fireplace. And so if somebody's already seen it once and they want to actually see it as a radio show, they could just do it 1940s style and see if it works. Mm-hmm. I'm curious. Anyway, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to bring blinders. if you don't set up my couch, I'm going to bring my little sleep mask.
Uh-huh.
Right.
And I'm just going to take in the radio show.
Well, apparently they are handing out masks now at some of these live radio shows for people to get the actual radio feel.
Damn it, that was my
idea. It's not original. Right. Sorry to break
another,
it to you. Another non-original
one you didn't
thing.
Trademark.
Damn it.
Sorry.
So someone's used Slade before and somebody's used an iMac.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. But no, it's a pretty cool genre and is actually coming back. Mm-hmm. There's a big resurgence, especially in the UK. I just heard on NPR the other day about how they're doing more radio plays.
Well, so podcasts are big and this
and stuff
is
like that.
Audiobooks,
yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
All right. Get out of here, Ed.
Well, okay. The show's at 7:30. You get there early to hear some singing, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Ed Pierce, Slade It, A Wonderful Life at Station Theater. All right, Kendall, welcome.
Hey, hey.
So stage manager for Wonderful Life, has that been a good experience for you?
Yeah, it's been one of the easier positions that I've had as a stage manager because I don't have to take down much blocking and I don't have to make sure everybody learns their lines because they don't have to do that either.
That's so true.
So it's kind of nice. But like I said, I'm running the board for the show as well. We do house manager stuff as well, so... I keep myself busy while there.
Okay, so you're in the studio today not to talk about your stage management expertise, but because of the excitement in town around the big audition mayhem happening on Saturday, of which your show is one of the centerpieces, the musical Falsettos.
Yes.
And you get to direct it.
I'm so excited.
And so this is, I think we were talking before, and you directed once in high school and once at the U of I in like a student production, I assume?
Yes, at the Armory, I directed The Wild Party by Andrew Lippa. I almost said Assassins, but that's not true. I stage managed that. Anyways, yes, The Wild Party.
And what did you direct in high school?
Edges.
At Urbana?
Yes. My friend Maura Kinney and I directed Edges, a song cycle in 2010 at Urbana High School. 2010? Yeah, 2010.
Was that a musical?
Yes. Pasek and Paul, who most recently, I believe, did the music for Greatest Showman. Is that true?
Yeah, that's the great thing about me as a host is that I love theater, but I'm so uneducated.
They just did
a movie. Can just say anybody's name,
and
I'm going to be like,
yeah. Anyways, it was good time.
Did you see Theory of Relativity at Urbana? Did you go see it?
I did not.
Man, they nailed it.
They did.
Yeah.
I've been looking forward to, but I've been a little jaded going back because that theater was, they started building it the year I graduated.
Oh, man. Oh.
So I never got to experience it myself, but I'm really excited to see some shows there.
Yeah. Well, that's what that whole group at Central, that junior and senior group, is going to feel when they come back to Central in a couple of years. Hopefully a theater even exceeding maybe Urbana's. I think that's kind of the goal. All right. So falsettos. what is it about falsettos that is important to you, or did you seek it out? To direct?
Absolutely. Growing up, back in high school, I was kind of obsessed with the show. I listened to it a lot. I thought the relationships between the characters, so the show is about Marvin and his wife Trina and their son Jason and his psychiatrist, Mendel, and his boyfriend, Whizzer. And their kind of dysfunctional family getting together. In the second act, we meet the lesbians from next door. Dr. Charlotte and Cordelia, and they're some of my favorite characters. But growing up, I thought, I just kind of really like connected with the relationship between Mendel and Marvin as a gay kid growing up in high school. And nowadays, I kind of really connect with the story on a more personal basis in that it deals with the AIDS crisis in 1980s New York City, I being HIV positive. And I'm just really excited to bring this story to Champaign-Urbana. And
is this the first time?
The full show, yes. Okay. In 1989, the station did March of the Falsettos, which
is the second
act
one. Oh, act one. Okay.
So I grew up being obsessed with act two, which is falsetto land.
Right. I like the second act better just from listening
to it. Yes. He grew as a playwright and a composer
and
between the two.
I heard that he composed the first one years before.
So I wrote it down.
Well, one of them was in 1979, I think, the first one.
March of the, In Trousers was in 1979. March of the Falsettos was in 1981, and Falsetto Land in 1990.
Right, so now, there's a lot of growth there.
Yeah, In Trousers he did by himself. James Lapine joined him for the for March of the Falsettos and Falsetto Land, and then putting them together as Falsettos.
And the hymn is William Finn.
Yes, right? William Finn.
Who also did Putnam County.
A New Brain. And then...
So is this so the show is sung through? Is that the way that he does it usually?
Yes. I know there's a little bit of spoken dialogue in Putnam, and there's a little bit in A New Brain, but for falsettos and both March of the Falsettos and Falsetto Land, it's completely sung through. And it is going to be a marathon for these actors. So
especially the child who plays Jason.
There's
Are you thinking
kid
of
in the show.
Double casting or anything?
It is definitely something I've considered. Mm-hmm. It's going to be something that I'll have to ask the actors if they're okay with as well, because I know being back in the day,
you wouldn't want
when
to.
I was an actor.
Right, sure.
God, I hated that.
Yeah, no, I totally understand. I just asked because of Fun Home, like we had an illness with our youngest cast member, and so I was just.
Well, and stamina.
It happens when they're so young.
I mean, I'm not planning on using any Backstreet crew. The actors are going to be moving all of the scenery.
Oh, wow. Okay.
As a stage manager, that is kind of my preference. And as a director, I would love seamless transitions.
Yeah. Well, I think
who doesn't love?
Yes.
The show is set up that when the characters aren't the focus, they usually remain on the stage anyway, right?
So they're going to be on stage unless they're changing their costume, which even that doesn't happen a whole lot during the acts. They're going to be helping out on stage or having their own business.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. But yeah, I have considered double casting the children. I've considered understudies for the other roles because, again, it's a lot. and it, we'll be doing this in April, which is not flu season, but it is allergy season, so I don't know what to expect. But we'll see. Mm-hmm. I'm just glad we're not doing it in flu season.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Right. April's a good time. Yeah.
So how is it for you, having been like so obsessed and fascinated with the show? You must have imagined yourself performing in it someday. Is it going to be hard to be on your side of the...
Maybe sometimes, but I don't love performing anymore. I love watching performers, and I love helping performers, and I like watching actors get to the points where they have like major breakthroughs. But I don't want to do it myself. It's hard, and I get really frustrated with myself, and I got over that back when I was taking college acting classes. They broke me down. And I'm fine with that, because I find myself a lot better suited as a director or a stage manager or as a choreographer, which I chose not to do. For Wild Party, I did choreography as well. I chose not to do that because mostly I really wanted to hang out with Monica Sammy some more.
Yeah. So she's your choreographer.
Yes. Monica Sammy will be doing choreography, Ty Tuttle, and music.
Is that your team? No assistant director?
Assistant director Crystal Moya.
What a dream team.
Yeah, it's yes, great.
I know. I'm super excited. I don't have a stage manager yet. So FYI, if you're looking for it, our auditions are this Saturday. Rehearsals start February 16th. I would love a stage manager long before that. So if you're listening, stage manager, let me know.
Yeah. So you get to be the one breaking people and driving them out of acting now instead of...
I like to think of myself as much more kinder, but I will lead them there. Absolutely.
Well, as I know that you appreciate the wisdom of Jonathan Larson, and he said the opposite of war is not peace, it's
creation.
Good God, if you'd have blown that up.
I was in Rent with CUTC back in the day.
I know. I remember that. I think that was the last musical I auditioned for.
Oh.
Maybe. So you did the... You were doing the choreography during auditions.
Oh, yeah.
Way back then?
That was a long time ago. I haven't done an audition. I have not taught an audition choreography in a long time.
So I've just been watching some of the Broadway, because I love Christian Borrell, and then Andrew Rommel, I think is his
Reynolds.
Name. Reynolds. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who I also saw live in Mormon. So... Anyway, this is going to be a really fun show. It doesn't open until, you said, wait, rehearsals are in February, so when do you open?
So we'll start rehearsals February 16th, or around about that date. I feel like we'll wait till after Valentine's Day. The performances are April 16th through May 2nd. Oh my gosh, I forgot the order of the months.
Yes,
April
you're right.
16th through May 2nd.
Okay.
And you're doing auditions with I Hate Hamlet,
directed by Katie Berkey, mm-hmm. will also be happening on Saturday. These are going from 9 a.m. till 3 p.m. For falsettos, we'll have callbacks following auditions.
Yeah, that's unusual.
I didn't have my music director available on Sunday.
Yeah, so you're just going
to
be texting.
I also don't want to have callbacks at the same time as Chicago callbacks, which would be much more difficult than having auditions at the same time, because everybody's got slots.
Yeah, can snag everybody.
Yeah. I will be in communication with the other directors so that we're not like stepping on each other's
toes.
That's good.
Abby, I offered you to come in today. Just saying. All right. Well, thanks
do both shows. Like, they could possibly do I Hate Hamlet and Falsettos.
Yes. Chicago and Falsettos are the same weeks.
Right, so can't do that. Right.
But. And you know what? All three of the plays are going to be going on at the same time. The plays that are auditioned, like Bus Stop, I Hate Hamlet, and How I Learned to Drive are all going to be up at the same weekend. And I know that, or during the same time,
right.
Which is also the time that the C2 production of Hunchback of Notre Dame is going to be going on. So that's a lot.
We're going to be busy.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have fun shows. I'll tell you that. Well, Kendall, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
See you at the show. This is great. I'm really excited about the cast that you're able to put together for such an awesome show. Want everybody to know that there are also two other radio shows going on right now besides It's a Wonderful Life. Goblins and the Gravedigger is going to be at Emmanuel Memorial Church, which is on University Avenue.
Yeah, 208 West University,
and
right across
shows?
From Westside Park. On the Saturday at 7 o'clock and Sunday at 3. And the first 15 minutes is the CUTC carolers. And then There'll be a short intermission and then the show.
And all the information about that and the auditions and It's a Wonderful Life and Christmas Carol Live, which is opening at Parkland next week, is all available at seeyouattheshow.com and on our See You at the Show Facebook page. Hold on tight. Here comes